Welcome to the Impactful Innovators podcast series. This series is produced from the fall 2020 class at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute and sponsored by the National Science Foundation and the Severino Center for Technological Entrepreneurship at RPI. This series highlights the stories of entrepreneurs and innovators as they go through the challenging process of changing the world. If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe to the Severino Center for Technological Entrepreneurship on YouTube or connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. We hope that this series will help inspire the next generation of innovators, entrepreneurs, and intrapreneurs at Rensselaer and beyond. Today's episode will feature John Haller, class of 1986, and is the co-founder and former CTO of MapInfo, a mapping software company which he started with a classmate and friend, Sean O'Sullivan. The startup pioneered street mapping on PCs. The company actually started as a class assignment at RPI and went on to IPO in 1994. Among many accomplishments, MapInfo introduced mapping to Microsoft so they could create an add-on in their Office 97 and Office 2000 product releases. John stayed with the company for 13 years and is responsible for the technology platform the system was built on. The company was later acquired in 2007 for $408 million in cash. MapInfo is where John got his feet wet in the startup space, but he didn't stop there. Realizing where his passion resided, he went on to create even more software that improved many more people's lives.
Hi, everybody. So 35 years ago, I was in the Lally School. I think we were in the Pittsburgh building, and Piero Betti was our teacher. So there's Piero. I wasn't when he was younger, but that was a more recent picture. But I took a principles of entrepreneurship class, and each class was started with a local entrepreneur that came in and told us just 10 or 15 minutes, a little bit about their business, some of their issues of the day, some cool things that they had done. And it was very inspiring because they're regular people and they had very understandable problems that we could relate to. And that is what really gave us the confidence and courage to start our own business, which we did right out of Pierre's class. So it's kind of here, and 35 years later, and I'm on the other side of the table to talk to you folks. I've been involved in three businesses over the years. The first was MapInfo, which rolled right out of this class. But the one I want to talk about today is Sports Signup Story. And I think it's a little more relatable. And I went into that business with more experience and in a more thoughtful way. So we very quickly realized we had a neat idea, but there were some things that we did to decide that it was going to be a good business. And I just wanted to kind of quick go through those with you. So I just want to give you a little bit of background on the two other companies, because that really set the stage for how I thought about Sports Signup. But MapInfo really started off as navigational technologies. There was a technological innovation, the CD-ROM. So before the CD-ROM, a hard disk on a PC in 85 was about 10 megabytes. So, you know, that's a whole two iPhone pictures today. But back then it was a lot of space and wasn't an issue. But CD-ROM came out and that held like 700 meg. So it was almost two orders of magnitude more. And when something revolutionary like that comes out, it just enables new ideas and applications and things. And my friend Sean had this idea of with that amount of space, you could store maps for like a third of the United States. And that meant that you could have a portable mapping system put in a car. You could have a car navigation. These were some of the slides I found from Pierre's class. We kind of built this business plan out of how we could bring this to market. We fell in love with the idea and we did it. Very quickly, we realized that car navigation was a thing of the future, was not a thing of the present. And so we pivoted and we had built this cool mapping software, which was revolutionary. We didn't really understand how revolutionary it was until we started showing it to different people. And it enabled a whole class of spatial relational analysis that people couldn't do otherwise. So we grew the company and met with success over the years. And by the time I left 14 years later, we had about 1,000 people and we were doing $150 million in revenue. And we're in 12 countries and I'd gone public in 95. I left MapInfo because MapInfo is focused on the business space and the consumer market was being ignored by us. And the internet had been invented and there was some mapping going on the internet. And so we had this vision of creating a service that would tell you where things were that you were interested in that were near you, kind of what Google does today. So it was a neat idea. We had the mapping background. We were getting into some big database stuff. I got some funding and Then 2001 happened. That was the little tech world explosion. And we didn't have any revenue at that point. And the climate for our continued existence looked bleak. So we sold the company very quickly. So that was a quick little two-year project. So then we're in 2001 now. And I was unemployed for the first time. I had become CEO of president of Near Me. And I'd gotten away from the tech. So I wanted to get back to the tech. So I wanted to work on a project to learn some new platforms. I wanted to learn the Microsoft.NET stack, SQL Server. So I was looking for a project. And my son was into soccer pretty big time. And my wife was a registrar for a local soccer club. And she was managing the registration for the 1,000 plus kids that were in the club. And it seems, you know, like not a big deal till you get these literal mounds of paper in the mail and checks and try to read the forms and people's handwriting and try to figure out what age groups they're in and try to get rosters to the division coordinators so they could create teams and very, very tedious. And I watched her do this and realized, of course, there's a better way to do it. The web-based solution that families would register their kids and you'd pay by credit card. And so I built a system for Latham Soccer. So we had success with Latham. The word got out in our local community and all the other local sports organizations, lacrosse and baseball, heard about it and wanted to use it. So I was like, huh, this really was just a project for me to learn .NET, but clearly we met a need and clearly people want to use it. So do we have enough? Can we build a business from this? So back at RPI, you know, this was the book that Pierre gave us and we used on how to grow a venture and write a business plan. Now, it seems very academic and tedious, but very important. To me, there are really four points that are most interesting and important to me when I look at other businesses or when I evaluate my own. Those are, number one, is really understanding what's out there already. So I came up with this new idea. Have other people come up with it? Have they been successful with it? So kind of see what's out there. Two is, how do you make money? Not all ideas can generate revenue in a sustainable business. So you have to understand how you make money. Three is, so now I built this cool thing. How do people find out about it and buy it from me? How do I get in front of them to tell them how great it is? And four, once I build a business, how can I defend it so that if someone comes along with something cheaper or a little bit better, how do I not lose them? So we spent probably about a year building out our plan and it all looked good and we proceeded and started the company. But I just want to dig into these four points and thus the title, I have a great idea, but is it really going to be a great business? So understanding the competition, there are probably successful people out there, maybe doing something similar to what I'm dreaming of. Is there room in the marketplace for another player? Is the market young and growing? And thus, I can get in there. Or the flip side, are there people in there doing what I'm doing, but not being successful at it? That's a little scary, but why aren't they being successful? In our case, for sports sign up, it was a crowded market space. There were a lot of people like me that were on the boards or friends of the organization, and in their spare time, it created a platform. But it was our side project, and no one had really taken it on as a business challenge to build something big and solid and trustworthy and dominate. So by dominate, we're talking about market share. Youth sports is huge. There are tens of thousands of clubs across the U.S. Could I get 5,000, 3,000 clubs? That would be a huge business. So for us, there were no dominant players. There was no one that seemed very credible and nobody making money, which really gets to the next point. So from point number one, it looked good for us. Point number two, how to make money. So the players of that time hadn't figured out how to inject themselves in the money stream. The models that we had seen where they were trying to charge the leagues an annual fee, let's say $1,000 a year to use their platform. Clubs had very small budgets. They certainly didn't have money before the season to license the software because they made their money through registrations. So that model didn't really work. But there's plenty of money. When people registered, I'm paying maybe $100 for rec soccer, $1,000 for premier or travel soccer. So there's lots of money. The trick is how to inject yourselves in that. What we came up with was, I mean, this all seems so obvious in hindsight because everyone else is doing it nowadays, is charge a registration fee. We give the software to the organization and you pay per registration. But better than that is we're collecting money on their behalf we do the payouts and we just withhold our fees. So if a kid registered for $100 and we charge $1.50, you know, then we'll pay him $90.50. If they needed $100, then they charge a little more. They charge, you know, $2 or whatever to cover their fees. So it didn't feel like the clubs were paying for it and they got to use the system. The other thing that's nice about this model is it's recurring. MapInfo was in the business of selling software, and that was a tough business because you sold to a bunch of customers, and the next quarter you get to find all new customers to sell the product to again. With soccer, you know, every season new kids are playing, or the same kids are playing, or clubs can have 1,000 kids every season. So if I can tap into that every season, I'm going to make my money. Nice that it could be multiple revenue streams, and there was an obvious one for these sports organizations was the credit card processing. We can make, for a club like Latham with 1,000 kids, we can make $1,500 a season on the reg fees. So credit card processing is quite amazing business model. So these credit card companies make about 2% that the merchant pays for. So I walk into a store, I buy something with my credit card, I pay the same list price or the same price in the credit card. I mean, the merchant is paying the 2% for the privilege of getting to be sold by credit card. Volunteer organizations, small organizations, not-for-profits can't get a merchant account. So they have to go to a third-party company. Today, there are companies like Stripe or PayPal, and sort of the going rate is about 3%. So we decided we were going to become a credit card processor and make that 1% that the Stripe, the PayPal make. So for that same set of 1,000 players, for $150 registration, we can make $1,500 on credit card processing and double our revenue. So it can make $3,000 for one sports club. If we had 300 clubs, we'd make $1 million in revenue. That's sort of a magic number for a startup of trying to make $1 million. 300 clubs, you know, we already had 10 that were interested in us in day one without even trying. So 300 seemed very possible. So we think we figured out how to make money. So the third was how to reach potential customers. This was harder. So obviously the local clubs all found out about us from word of mouth, but it's a big country. There are lots of other towns and states and things that we needed to sell to. And we didn't have a local presence there, of course. With a company like MapInfo, we went to trade shows. There were trade magazines that people that did mapping read. So it was easy to write articles or put in ads and communicate with potential customers. Sports organizations are run by parents who are just volunteering, and they're the decision makers. And who knows what they do for a living, but there's no way to find them. So that presented a real problem. What we learned very quickly was there are these governing bodies in all youth sports. So for soccer, there's U.S. Youth Organization, there's ASO, American Youth Soccer Organization, a bunch of others. Baseball, there's Little League, Babe Ruth, Cal Ripken, Dixie. Lacrosse, there's U.S. Lacrosse. So these huge organizations, they're nationwide, and they tend to be broken up hierarchically with the national organization, then state or regional organizations. In our area, we had Eastern New York. I had about 120,000 registered players, represented all the clubs from New York City and Long Island up to Plattsburgh. And then there's the regional. So for this area in Troy, we had the Capital District Youth Soccer League. They had maybe 30,000 people under their umbrella, not that many, 10,000. And then each of the local clubs, you know, maybe had 1,000. So Capital District had Bethlehem and Saratoga and that region. So if we could basically sell to these leagues and get them to recommend us or mandate us, that would be the coup. So we set out to learn what these these governing bodies do. And it's really interesting. They're all membership-based. So the local clubs pay dues. The dues go up, and that's their revenue. And in exchange for the revenue, they create rules and they provide tournaments. They manage the refereeing and stuff like that. But basically, they have all these rules about how many kids can be on a roster and the ages and whether a player can play in on two different teams or not. And there's a lot of data. So I have all these players and I need data to understand it all. And so there's systems that existed to manage these organizations. So we managed to get a meeting with Eastern New York Youth Soccer League. Matt knew one of the board members and got us a meeting. And we went to learn about it. And they were shopping for a system because they were doing stuff in Excel and it was a disaster. And they knew they needed to use a tool, but the tools were very expensive. They were $200,000 and that was half of their annual budget. So there's no way they could afford it, but they needed some of the functionality of what it did. So we talked to them to try to understand what their problems were and what their plans were. And we asked Ray, you know, what's your biggest single problem? If you could make one problem go away, what would it be? He's like, oh, well, you know, that's easy. But this travel authorization process, So if I'm a kid playing in Latham soccer and I want to go to a tournament on Labor Day weekend down in Bethesda, I have to get authorization to travel. And that shows that I'm in good standing with the league, that I've paid my dues, that I've had my concussion awareness training, and I haven't been red carded. So the way it worked was to download a form on their website. They would fill it out, mail it in to the office. The office would review it, type it into Excel, and send them back a signed letter. So Ray wanted it to be a web form. Data was automatically entered into a database, and they were emailed a PDF with their certificate. So when Matt and I were driving home from the meeting, we kind of thought about it, and that was really technically pretty easy. So we built it for them that week, and we gave it to them for free. And they loved it. They used it immediately. And they had like one person, one of their staff of four, dedicated to that task and that freedom up to do real work. And that got us in. So we spent the next 3 or 4 years solving one of their problems after another and built a reporting platform for them that really did everything. We didn't charge them for it. But conveniently, their system worked a heck of a lot better if the clubs were using our system. So after year two, they recommended the clubs use our system, and then a bunch of them joined. And then after year four, they mandated that all the clubs use our system. It was a huge coup. They were our biggest customer, and that was what we tried to replicate around the nation. Kind of what we learned there was we figured out that these governing bodies was a way to reach out the customers that we needed. And that also gets into point four here, is how to defend the business. You know, we conveniently made our system work with what was in place with Eastern New York. And so it was a win-win if they all used our system, if they all participated in our ecosystem. It made it very, really impossible for a single club to bail, and certainly for the leagues to bail. We had an incredible retention rate of like 98% when they were in an organization like this. We did have a lot of one-offs. Our retention rate was like more like 92% with those. So yeah, luck into ecosystem. So the second thing we really focused on was customer-specific features. A lot of the tools out there, I'm building them for a broad audience. I'm building them for multiple sports. I'm building it for rec soccer and travel soccer. They're all very different. The organizations didn't want to adapt to the software that they're using. So we made some key pieces of our software customizable, either by the customer or by what we call loadable classes. So one thing was like the league age. The age of a kid in soccer, we called it U8, you know, under 8 if I was 8 by August 1st, or if I was under 8 by August 1st, then I'm a U8. I play in that division. Baseball was as of April 15th, then I'm a 14-year-old. And then Dixie was down south, and they had different school seasons, and so their rules are different. So anyway, it was very important that we could customize their age computation for the divisions, and we made that very easy to do, kind of helped lock those customers in. The other thing was customer branding. Customers didn't care that they were using sports signup. They, of course, love their own brand. So we hit our brand and we made it all about them, which they liked. They also tended to have their own words for things, for divisions. So we let them customize the vernacular. And that also was worked out, seemed to be a big deal for them. So to recap, you know, there are lots of great ideas out there. People always tell me about their neat idea. And really, the challenge is, how do I make it into a business? And it just is really worth being very thoughtful about that before you dive in and take people's money and hire people. Plans evolve, you need to pivot. You always learn things when you dig into it, but trying to get out the gate as best you can is worth it. So just to kind of close by just saying what happened to sports sign up, we got very fortunate. Business came easily and we kept it really lean just because I had been burnt at near me with losing all of our investors' money. I didn't want to be reliant on investors. So we grew it slow. When we made money, we could hire someone else and we hired someone else. But that also made us focus on revenue, that we wanted to add features that were going to get us the next sale to make us money so we could hire the next person. We could have grown faster if we had taken investment money, but I did like the slow and steady pace that we grew. You know, once we started off in soccer, and once we nailed soccer, we diversified and we got into Canada a little bit. We bought a Canadian competitor and we were on a growth plan. We had no intention on selling, but Time Inc. knocked on our door and they don't exist anymore, but Time Inc. used to be in the newspaper business, and one of their big brands was Sports Illustrated, and they wanted to basically get into the digital space. You know, they understood how much money was being spent on new sports, and it would be great to have a captive audience that you could advertise to. So they're trying to create a kind of a rollout of different tools in the youth sports sector, and we were one of them. So they bought us ahead of when we wanted to sell, because we were only about $5 million in revenue, 30 people when we sold. But it was strategic for Time, and they paid a premium for that, and it worked out well. I stayed on with them for 2 more years to transition because it was my baby, and I ended up leaving about 2 years ago. Unfortunately, timing. So I created a subsidiary called Sports Illustrated Play that Sports Signup was part of, but their CEO who had this vision left, and then the new CEO didn't get it, and he sold the business. He sold Sports Illustrated Play, and then ended up selling Timing to Meredith, so Timing doesn't exist anymore. And that was our crew at the towards the end there. So it was a fun story.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Impactful Innovators podcast series. Be sure to continue listening as we explore more of the stories of entrepreneurs and innovators as they go through the challenging process of changing the world. Thank you again to the National Science Foundation and the Severino Center for Technological Entrepreneurship for making this podcast possible. If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe to the Severino Center for Technological Entrepreneurship on YouTube, share it with a friend, or connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. We hope that this series will help inspire the next generation of innovators, entrepreneurs, intrapreneurs at Rensselaer and beyond.